In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we have got a whole lot of baseball to talk about. We've got some Bears talk, maybe a little end of season Bulls and Blackhawks. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly affordable prices. Wyatt Kaiser just got put down for the NHL or AHL playoff push. You can see him, future star defenseman for the Blackhawks. So make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing, my friend?
I am doing just fine. I had a real rough go with COVID last week, so I'm finally over it, feeling much better. Better feeling now than I was at this time last week. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's terrible. I mean, I remember how I felt when I got COVID the one time, and it was dreadful. I mean, it was the worst I've ever felt in my whole life. I don't wish that on anybody. So I'm glad you made it through there. Okay.
Yeah. You know, it really did feel like a bad cold this time around. And I feel like it was, not nearly as bad as the first time, but what made it really unfun was just add on the really crappy weather outside. It just kind of made it feel worse.
Yeah. All right. Where do you want to start today?
Well, I think that since baseball season is underway, we have to talk a little baseball.
Yeah. You want to start north or south side?
Can we start with the north side?
Absolutely. I want to talk about our new friend, Shota Imanaga.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched the first game, and maybe I'm being a little bit unfair, maybe a little bit of a negative Nancy. There was some amazing stuff in there, but I honestly and truly feel that he got aided a lot in that game by cold weather and winds that were blowing in. Because I don't think there was a ground ball that he gave up. I think it was all strikeouts and fly balls, and some of those were hit pretty darn hard.
Yeah, it was fly balls and ground balls, and his main objective there was to pitch to the conditions and get the outs and just be efficient, because he knew the team he was facing, the Colorado Rockies. He knew the conditions that were out there, cold, wet, rainy, wind blowing in. So, he pitched to those conditions and he was able to make it work.
And, you know, and hearing that makes me feel a little better, because when he came out for the second outing, he was even better. So, my fear was going into this that, you know, he gives up the long ball. And that first outing, you know, gave me some fears. I didn't think that those would go out, but I was projecting those same pitches getting hit when the wind is blowing out or when it's a sunny 80 degree day. But after seeing him pitch that second game, I'm feeling a lot more confident, because that dude's got some stuff.
He made Shohei Ohtani in the first inning look foolish.
Yeah. He looked so good. And I'm like, if this is the guy that we get all season long, that contract was an absolute steal.
Well, I mean, you look at the fastball he has, and there's a lot of late life to it. And I mean, he throws kind of a funky splitter where, you know, it's a left-handed splitter, so it doesn't look like your normal splitter. You throw some breaking pitches. What was really impressive in his outing against the Dodgers, and obviously it was cut short by rain, but he had what, 43 pitches in 4 innings? Like,
yeah,
he was in cruise control. It was just boom, 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 inning over. And you saw him get a few ground balls this time. You saw him got a few strikeouts, and the fly balls he was getting, those were just pop fly routine ducks snore. I mean, they were, you didn't see like a fly or two to the warning track that made you like hold your breath as much, but you saw a lot of just weak pop flies and some grounders. So that was really impressive too, because you look at the first few games, the weather wasn't optimal in either game. And when you're a guy that relies a lot on grip and just being able to execute with movement, it's harder to throw in those type of conditions. And the way he's executed, you got to give him a lot of credit.
Yeah, and you mentioned that split finger. He didn't really show that in spring training. And then
No.
he comes out in the season and he is just throwing that thing and it's nasty.
Yeah, and listen, there's gonna be no doubt where we're gonna get into the warmer months and it's gonna be more challenging. And there's gonna be moments where I think he is going to have some issue with the long ball in those summer months. But what is going to be a big definition of him is how he adjusts to that. And like I said, in game one, I even said right there, listen, just pitch the conditions. Balls are not going to carry today. So being conscious and aware of that, I think there is something to that. And listen, when you go out and you strike out nine guys, regardless, like you're clearly doing something right, and you're not giving up a lot of hard contact. Yes, there were probably two balls in that Rockies game that goes out in the middle of June. Like, okay. But it wasn't one of those cases where like, oh, he struck out three and he was just getting line drive after line drive. You saw a lot of swing and miss and a lot of good stuff. And I think the biggest takeaway, more than anything, in these first two games was he threw strikes. The command was good.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it was such a spectacular outing. I loved it.
Yeah.
But taking a step back, when this season started, I think all of us as Cubs fans, the first two games were not what we were expecting. Based on the season. I mean, I know we've all been split on our projections for the Cubs, but those first two games going 0-2, you're like, oh, I don't like how this is going. And then with Tyone starting the season injured and Justin Steele getting hurt, I think then we all collectively were clutching our pearls and they've really responded. They've really responded to the adversity, and you're seeing this team play pretty well.
Well, I think for me, the defining element of this team so far has been that offense. And no, they don't have a lineup with the power that the Dodgers or the Braves have. But these at bats, these quality at bats where they're just drawing walks relentlessly. And outside of the Saturday Dodger game, you're seeing them come up with clutch hits. And, that is going to slump at some time. You're going to see some times where they don't always execute the way they are. But, I mean, look at the top of your order. Ian Happ right now has been one of the main drivers of this team, the way he gets on base and the quality at bats he has. And then you have Seiya Suzuki ripping the ball everywhere. And Christopher Morel is hitting so well. Dansby Swanson's doing a good job. Michael Busch, very, very impressive approach so far, wouldn't you say? Like, those at bats are good.
Yeah. I mean, you've got pretty much everybody's hitting well. Bellinger's not hitting so well, but he had a good series.
I
At least.
think, and he's still drawing some walks. He's hit a few homers. I think he'll come around. He's had some hard hit balls for outs. He has that swing where it's not always optimal for the conditions. And we saw him hit some fly balls and, some drives into right field that just found glove. So I'm not worried about him yet.
There's one guy who is not hitting well on the Cubs, and that's Nico Hoerner. And honestly, you look at the stats, you look at it on paper, and it's kind of concerning at this point, or getting to the concerning level. But when you watch him play, like he hasn't had a lot of terrible at bats. He's making some contact. It just,
He's had some tough outs.
yeah, he's had some tough outs and some hard hit balls. I think it's just the ball luck is has not been in his favor. And if you hit the same pitch with the same exit velocity and you hit it an eighth of a second, different, and it's a double versus a hard out to the right fielder. And that's really kind of where he's been.
And look at the walks, though.
It's, when you see, when we talk about the White Sox, some guys with similar stats, you look and you're like, all right, that's concerning. That dude just looks terrible. Eye test and what I'm seeing on paper is in the stat sheet. Ego Hoehner, I just feel like he's just had some bad luck, but I don't feel like he's been having a ton of bad at bats. It looks
No,
fine out there.
look
He
at the
looks confident.
OBP.
Yeah, it's he's gonna it's gonna the mean is gonna come back. He's gonna get those hits. He's gonna bring that up. I'm not that concerned. For the most part, everybody coming in is swinging the bat pretty well. Amaya looks Tauchman. I love watching Morel up there. Suzuki's been, like a man possessed.
Hell, even Miguel Amaya's been having some decent swings at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to see. He looks so comfortable up there.
Yeah, he does. You mentioned Mike Tauchman. It's like, yeah, the batting average doesn't look good, but the at bats.
Look at that on base percentage.
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't chase anything outside of the zone.
No. And you know what? In previous years, we've seen the Cubs go through cycles under the Theo regime
Boom or bust.
where it was a lot of home run power, but there was a lot of strikeouts. And then you did a kind of a switch and you had a lot of walks. So you had guys taking walks, but you just didn't have those hits. And, in some ways you're like, oh, well, getting a walk is a walk, but it to score a run from walks takes a lot of walks. A walk with a coupled with a hit can score a run. So, they're not on the stat sheet. It's just you're getting on base, but you've got to have ball contact and put the ball in play and get some base hits to go with those walks. And I feel like we're finally starting to see a meld of that where, you're not just going up there and taking pitches and taking those walks, is you're actually putting them in good at bats where when they finally give you something to hit, you'll hit it, but you're not going to chase bad pitches. And
Right,
I
right.
like the construction. And you mentioned the lack of power. Yeah, they don't have a guy that's going to put up 40 or 50 home runs, but they've got a bunch of guys that can put up 20, maybe 25 home runs. And you've got a lot of guys that are going to hit doubles. And I just think that if you get on base and you're hitting hard line drives, that you're going to get those runs and you might get them in a better clip than relying on the home run consistently.
Yeah, and I think that what we saw, especially in that Rockies series, is you had great at bat after great at bat, drawing walk after walk, and then boom, you deliver the big hit. Whether it's a sac fly, base hit, whatever, you've been able to do that. And then you look at game one against the Dodgers, where, I saw the highlights and everything. I didn't see most of the game until the end because of work, but first inning, they get mowed down. And you're thinking, all right, it's the Dodgers. Look at this pitching staff. This doesn't look good. And then all of a sudden, boom, you score five runs and you knock the guy out. And you see that with the combination of, hey, here's a few walks. Hey, here's a line drive base hit to center from Nick Madrigal. And then the big hit with Suzuki doubling off the wall. So you're seeing all these things kind of come together. The one question you have is, like, approach is approach, but can you maintain the clutch hitting? I mean, it's going to go up and down. It really is, but you're giving yourself a better chance by being able to have the approach that they have. And that's really the thing, because if you're just kind of the boom or bust swing for the fences, it's going to always be a boom or bust result. You're going to go through the stretches where you can't get anything going. And then, hey, there's going to be the stretches where you're swinging for the fences. There's going to be those stretches where you're connecting. In this case, yes, there's going to be slumps. There's going to be some real rough patches, but you're giving yourself a better chance to be consistent if the approach is good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I really like the approach they've been taking. And I think we're finally starting to see a little bit of the Craig Council effect on this
team.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, one thing that we saw in a very small sample size so far is, you know, Garrett Cooper, limited role, but he's been hitting so far. He had, what, a 3-4 hit night the other night against the Colorado Rockies?
He just missed the cycle.
Yeah, that's right. So he had a home run, a single, and a triple, I believe it was. He was missing one hit.
I think he was missing the single.
It was the single. Okay. Double, triple, home run. That's right. If you're getting production from those bench guys too, that's really big. Even Nick Madrigal in that first game against the Dodgers, not only did he have the game tying hit, but he also made some defensive gems over at third. Because let's be real, he's the best third baseman on the team right now in terms of just being a fielder.
You know, a year ago at this time, if somebody was like, hey, 1 year from now, you're going to have Nick Madrigal be your defensive replacement at third base that you rely on to make gem plays, you'd probably be like, bruh, I don't believe you.
You on drugs.
But, I mean, that's really what's happening because Morel has not been so good as a fielder at third.
No, it's been rough. He can pick the throws, or the I should say he can pick the grounders, but the throws to first, it's like watching Rex Grossman.
I played baseball and I hated playing third because like if you're playing second, you're playing short, if you have, you know, a bad release on your ball, you know, but it's not terrible. The first baseman, if he's any good, is going to dig that out of the ground. It's going to put his arm out, you know, in any direction and be able to get it. But at third, you really got a good distance. So even the slightest, you know, misrelease on your throw gets exaggerated by the time it gets to the first baseman. And, you know, and it gave me like a, I don't want to say the yips, but man, like it just, I got so nervous when I would have to throw that it affected me, you know, at bat, affected me, you know, on the field. And I just preferred just being a second baseman because it, you know, all that was out of my head.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
One thing we saw against Colorado that we're not that used to is we saw the opener.
Yeah, how about Luke Little throwing that, darts?
Well, that, and he closed the game before and then came and opened the next game. And you saw the return of Ben Brown and did a nice job coming in there that game, pitched half a game and looked pretty decent. And there's one more dude that I, at points, I've not liked at all, but has been ace this year. It's Mark Leiter Jr.
You know, he was so effective for much of last year, and we kind of saw the tank empty out at the end, and hopefully this year he won't have to have the same type of workload that he had last year. So you want him to be able to be more consistent throughout, but I mean, so far so good for him.
Yeah. You know, he's he's been good, and I'm hoping that Craig Counsell ends up being managing the bullpen better. And I know it's going to be a little bit of a struggle for these next few weeks because, you know, you don't know when Tyone's going to be back, and you don't know when Steele's going to be back, and you're sort of, you know, just going how you can go, but and getting whatever you can out of the replacement starters. But, you know, I'm hoping that he can give them some rest here and there to really preserve them for the end of the year, because last year that bullpen just was gassed the end of the year, the whole bullpen.
And we have big problems with the bullpen right now because Julian Merriweather, it was just announced that he's going to be out much longer than we thought.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. And I don't know, man. I still don't trust this bullpen.
I really, really, really don't like Kwas.
I tried to be a defender of that guy. I was a truther, but I was really just... I think that Saturday's game was the breaking point because he came in and two on, two out after Jordan Wicks, who I think has massive cojones. If you want another promising outing, look at what Jordan Wicks did on Saturday. That was worth noting, but
yeah,
two on, two out. I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, I was saying, yeah, he was great.
Yeah, he was. But look at two on, two out. And he walks the first guy on four pitches. None of those were close. That was completely uncompetitive on his part. And then a wild pitch. And then a two-run double. I'm like, okay, that's enough of that. Like, I thought that there were stretches last year. I'm like, you know, maybe this guy could be something. Like, really, I think this guy might be something. And we can't go through this over and over. I won't be, you know... He had the rough-ish outing where he gave up a two-run home run against the Rockies, but I'm like, okay, the Cubs are up like 12 to nothing, and you're just trying to fire the ball in there, whatever. But this was an important high-leverage situation, and it just didn't – it just didn't get the job done. And what really sucks about the bullpen in general is you had a pitcher injury coupled with a rain delay that forced you to pitch like five plus innings from the bullpen in two games where Justin Steele was cruising in the opener. And now you have to do bullpen days because of that. And then with Shota Imanaga, who was rolling, and then a 3-hour rain delay. And then it was a five innings for the bullpen. However, Danny Palencia came up and just took care of business, which was good to see.
Yeah, it was nice to see that. I mean, he's gets pulled up from the minors and thrown into things. So hopefully he responds like, you know, like we hope, but I'm not holding my breath with him, but it was a nice outing for him.
I look right now, it's like, I don't want to shit on Adbert Alzolay by any means because he's done the job. There are chinks in that armor that make me a little nervous. I'm going to be completely honest.
You know, I'm, we'll see. We'll see. I'm just,
I mean, like, you look at the results on paper, you're like, yeah, that'll play. I just look at that Dodgers save. That was a Michael Bush diving catch away from being a tie game.
Right. You know, I'm not, when he's up there, you're right. On paper, you're like, oh, that looks pretty good. It was like a 2 ERA.
Mm-hmm. And, the save percentage is good overall.
Yeah. But you're right. It wouldn't be a Cubs closer if you didn't give me the willies, you know, the majority of the time. But it's a much different feeling than when he goes in versus Kwas.
Oh God. Yeah. It's not
but,
even comparable.
So I'm not like terrified, but I'm also, I'm also not stopping any of my weird rituals that I need to do to make the Cubs win.
Yeah, right. I just, it still annoys me that the Cubs didn't make another effort to bring in one more proven reliever. You brought in Hector Neris, which is fine, but there were guys out there easily attainable. Hell, you could have gotten a Kenley Jansen or the guy that used to be on the Reds. Blanking on his name. David Robertson was out there.
Yeah.
You could have brought in another arm.
It's weird. It's been like their MO is that they're not going to spend big money on relievers.
No, they don't. But the thing is that guys that were available were very easily attainable. You weren't going to break the bank with Jensen or Robertson or. I mean, it was Lorenzen I was thinking of. There were guys, you could have added one more. That annoys me.
I'm not going to argue with you on that. They need to be more proactive because they feel like they can just rebuild a whole bullpen, from scratch, and it's not that easy. And they've had luck in some years, but it's also been an issue too over certain years. And another guy they could have got is their old friend Andrew Chafin, who
Yeah.
went for on a reasonable contract.
Yeah. Yeah. But
So
we'll see.
tonight's game is going to be fun. It's I really like watching Assad, and I like him having this opportunity. And he's going to be facing our old friend Yu Darvish.
Yeah, you know what? And this is, these West Coast trips are tough. So you go to San Diego. I know San Diego isn't lighting the world on fire, but that team can still play. That's not an easy one. And then you go to Seattle, they project to be competitive, and then you go to the Diamondbacks, who not only are the defending National League champs, but they are just every year a damn thorn in your side. And this is gonna be tough, man. This is a tough April, and I know we just got through beating the Dodgers, but you don't really have a break for a little while, and you just got to keep doing what you're doing. I just hope that this already taxed bullpen doesn't come around and bite us in the butt. That's my main concern. So what I'm hoping for is if we can get a little more distance from the starters over the next few weeks. Six, seven innings would be great. We could just get that. That would be very, very ideal.
Yeah, I mean, Tyone seems to be pretty close to coming back. I don't know what you're going to get from him, but he's going to be close to coming back. It's you just got to weather the storm, like you said. The schedule makers didn't do the Cubs any favors, but it's y'all play the same number or y'all play the same teams. It's just catching people at the right time. And, we have to remember that I think all of us thought if we could just not get swept by the Dodgers, we'd be happy. And they took two of three. They're after an 0-2, you take away that 0-2 start, and the Cubs are 6-1.
And you were 10, 15 feet away from being what, 7-2 with that Morel grand slam that just went foul. Yeah.
And, even though the Pirates have started off just absolutely on fire, like you're right in this division with even playing, you're playing tough opponents and the Pirates are playing, the little sisters of the poor.
This division might be very competitive because I don't think the Brewers are a joke like some people thought they were going to be.
They're playing much better than I thought. The Cardinals are playing better than I thought.
The Cardinals have also beaten the shitty ass Marlins.
They also beat the Dodgers.
Yeah, but didn't the Dodgers win that series?
I thought they would, maybe they did. I thought it was the Cardinals won, but maybe I was
No,
wrong.
they did not.
Okay.
The Reds scare me. The Pirates are no, like, I don't think the Pirates are they like 8-2,
They're
nine and
eight
two?
and two.
Right. Is that like a, are they going to sustain that type of winning? Probably not, but I don't think they're just going to lie over and die this time around.
I'm going to guarantee they don't continue playing 800 baseball season long.
Yeah, I could probably guarantee that too.
You know what's wild though is look at the average age of the starters for the Pirates versus the Cardinals, and it is like a generation apart. There's the starters for the starting rotation for the Cardinals is so old. And for the Pirates, it's so young.
Yeah. That Pirates team worries me, man. They got some arms and they
Yeah.
got some ballers, and Paul Skeens is gonna come up. That team concerns me. And I think people are not taking them as seriously as we should.
You know, it's the same thing with the Reds. Like, do they have a good farm system? Yeah. Do they have a lot of good players? Yeah. But you know what? In a couple of years, they're all going to be Yankees and Dodgers anyway.
Well,
You know,
you know, I just I, there's a tiny bit of bitterness I have, and I know I have to get over it, but I just when we just missed the postseason last year, that was your easiest window to get to a postseason, because the Reds were still up and coming with a lot of chinks in the armor that they were, trying to grow out of. The Pirates were not yet arrived. The Cardinals were downright bad, which never happens. And it would just suck to have another successful season, but you're in a division with teams that are just as good, if not better. So it's a long way to go. I'm not trying to draw any conclusions, but I mean, the other NL Central teams, you look at them, they're winning every day too.
Yeah,
But it is April 8th, so it's a long season.
we're like 6% done with this season.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a long way to go, and you know, one 3-game sweep of the Pirates, and it just radically changes the dynamic of the division at this point. So I'm not, you know, until all these teams have gone through a tough stretch of games to go with their easy stretch. I'm not, you know, anointing anybody. You know, the Pirates are playing well because you win the games that are on your schedule, but the
They
games
just
that are
took
on their,
2 or 3 from the Orioles.
yeah, then, but they also beat the Marlins and they beat an AL Central team. So, I'm not anointing them, but and the
I
Orioles.
don't want to anoint anybody, but I think this is going to be more difficult than some people want to believe.
Yeah, but with these young teams, at some point they go into slumps, and the Reds did that. Remember how hot the Reds were for a while,
Yeah, they couldn't lose.
and then they just remembered, oh, hey, we're all young players, and we're going to go through our ruts, and that happened. You know, that's just the nature of baseball. It's a 162 game season, and it's tough to go through every day. You know, young ball players, it's the longest they've ever played, ever. And you know, so I like the position the Cubs are in. I think their starting pitching is deep. Their hitting has been amazing. And they've got the best manager in the division.
Yeah.
So I like the Cubs' chances, but again, we're super early. Anything can change.
Yep, absolutely. For better or for worse.
Right. We'll come May, we can reevaluate this after a month of baseball and really look at things and be like, okay, where are we sitting after this point?
Yeah, for sure.
But one team that we don't need to reevaluate come May, we know they're shitty, is the White Sox.
Oh.
That team is an absolute dumpster fire. They were like 8 games into the season. Oh, 8 games into a 162 game season. And Fangraphs put their chances of making the postseason, not to win the division, to make the playoffs at 0.00.
Yeah,
Like,
they're now 1-9 as of this recording.
yeah, they are 1-9.
They've been shut out how many times?
A couple. They're not good. I mean, like, the Marlins are worse, but they're neck and neck. They're competing for this. And not only that is you get this like double whammy of you're not good, and then the soft tissue injuries are already starting up. You already had
Eloy, shocking.
Eloy, yeah, was already hurt, but now Lubob is hurt with
Yep.
that same hip injury that he had, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, 2021 is when he had it.
Yeah, so he already had this, and it's apparently not as severe, but it's a repeat injury.
Right. And how many times have we seen them? They did it again with Eloy. Oh, he's day to day. We'll play a man down, see how he goes. And then a few days later, after playing a man down, they put him on the IL.
Yeah. And so you look at this and you're like, how is this happening? So you have Brebbia is on the 15-day, and Lubob, was put on the 10-day, but you know it's going to be longer than 10 days with him being out.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I don't know if you heard the call that John Schriffens made when the injury happened. But if that's going to be his call every time a White Sox player gets injured, and he's in for a long, long season.
What did he say? I don't know.
It was the baseball version of Michael Scott when Toby Flenderson comes back. No! No, God, no!
Oh man.
It's a disaster over there.
So they've been shut out four, so they played 10 games, they've been shut out four times.
Yeah, and they're just a bad team. Like, your pitching hasn't been awful,
Your starting pitching's actually been pretty solid.
but you can't score any runs. Like, what is going on?
You have
And
Robbie Grossman, who's like what, 35 and old now, leading off because Benintendi couldn't lead off because he was doing terrible. Grossman doesn't have a hit yet. Moncada's hitting 270. Okay, I mean, the average is fine, but I don't think he even has an RBI yet. He doesn't have a home run or an
wait,
RBI.
the for who?
Moncada.
Oh, Moncada? The average is fine. And the OPS is okay, but they're like empty calories with his hits.
Right. Andrew Vaughn is really struggling.
That OPS is 428 for him.
That's his
171 average.
OPS. Oof.
OPS 428. Mike Talkman's on base percentage is higher than that. Benintendi is hitting 154 with a 214 on base percentage and a 368 OBP.
That is your highest paid contract ever.
Wait, and I'm gonna that's not even the worst part, is he sucks as a fielder too.
Well, he can't throw.
He can't
Like,
throw. Salvador Perez took a base on him. Salvador Perez runs a 9.240.
That fast.
That guy is slower than molasses, and he's just like, nah, I got this. I'll beat this out.
It's like Benintendi's throwing a paper airplane out there.
It's like watching little kids throw it in, in Little League. You're just like, oh, they just threw a 12 hopper across to first base.
Yeah, it's ugh.
It's like the absolute polar opposite of an Andre Dawson or a Bo Jackson throw home.
Oh God, Bo Jackson, you wouldn't even see the throw. He threw it so hard.
It was like a laser beam. Andre Dawson, too. Andre Dawson had an absolute cannon. And Benintendi's just thrown out there with a wet noodle.
Well, have you ever seen the clip from Arrested Development where Job tries to throw the note into the sea and he just like with all his might tries to throw it and it just twirls in place and falls?
That show is so good.
The first three seasons, the pre-canceled Arrested Development was just genius TV.
Oh man. But yeah, this White Sox team is just bad.
Nicky Lopez, I mean, he's never really been a hitter except for 1 year. Good glove though, but that's about
I
it.
mean, Paul DeJong has been your best hitter.
He's batting 150.
I know, but he's got a 650 OPS. Like, and he scored a few runs with home runs.
Yeah, doesn't he have two homers?
I believe so.
Does anybody else have two homers on this team?
Let's see.
Oh, Luis Robert does.
Yeah, but
But he's injured.
he'll be out 3 months.
You think that long?
No, I don't know. I'm gonna guess he is out a month.
Yeah, I think maybe mid-May is when he comes back.
That seems fair, but it won't be his only stint.
Just like it won't be the only stint for Eloy, most likely.
Oh yeah, Eloy.
I really try to feel bad for Eloy because like he's trying to play the game and his body is just not letting him.
How does one team have such bad luck with soft tissue injuries? It's like one thing, you're like, oh, he was diving in first and he broke his wrist. All right,
Right.
that just happened. You can't, you're not having him go out there and take 50 cc's of milk every day. Like, what are you going to do? It's a broken bone. But these soft tissue injuries, like, is the training staff
It's when he's
terrible?
jogging to first he gets hurt. He's not even in the field anymore. It's just crazy.
Paul DeJong with two home runs, Lou Bob with two home runs.
Doesn't Shoemake have one home run?
See, Corey Lee with one, Gavin Sheets with one, Braden Shumake with one. That's the only White Sox with home runs.
Wow. Wow. And, I don't know if you saw this, but I couldn't help but watch the segment of the Sox post-game show when Chuck and Ozzie were talking about soft tissue injuries and how you, quote, don't pull fat. Did you see that clip?
That is not an Ozzie Guillen. That's a John Kruk. John Kruk has said that. And
Yes.
it's kind of true, but it's most of the time the fat guys aren't doing the same athletic things as the athletic guys are. But I mean it's funny and sort of true.
You don't eat no cheeseburgers. That was an interesting conversation and it's not just the White Sox with devastate. Look at all these pitcher injuries. It's become a subject of conversation. Did you hear what Tyler Glasnow had to say about that?
No.
Listen to that interview. He talked about how post-sticky stuff, you're having to grip the ball deeper in your hand and harder. So think about that. Harder grip, deeper in your hand. He used to say, you used to just hold it like you were holding an egg. precious. Now, if you're throwing hard, like a lot of pitchers are today, and you're throwing it tighter and harder, doesn't that kind of make the wheels in your head turn a bit? You start thinking about the injuries?
You know, I think there's a lot of things that are coming into play with these pitcher injuries. I would agree that that's probably one thing. The pitch clock has been one thing. The fact that over how many years that it used to be the bullpen guys would just come in there and just fire away, and the starters were more nuanced in their pitching. Now the starters are coming in and gearing up and just throwing everything hard too, for the most part. And you've got a whole bunch of things that are just coming together, and now pitchers are just getting decimated. And that's...
You have more 100-mile-an-hour throwers than you ever had before.
Yeah, this is baseball. Baseball's got to figure... This is a baseball issue and not an individual issue with, you know... The White Sox have their own issues with injuries, but as far as the pitching injuries go, it's getting to the point where, I mean, it's probably beyond the point at this where we're at, is that this is a league-wide issue.
Well, look, you saw the young Marlins starter, and then you saw Shane Bieber, big name, go out. I mean, you're seeing notable pitchers go down, and Spencer Strider is now having issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't some, like, mid-low rotation guys you're seeing. Like, Shane Bieber is a Cy Young Award winner. Spencer Strider, I think, was the betting favorite to win the Cy Young in the National League this year.
You're having pitchers speak out. Let's see. I'm a little reading. I saw, like, as we were going on, The Athletic had an article about it. Shohei Ohtani on rise of arm injuries. Pitching with max effort, clock could be significant factor. They decided pitching with max effort, along with the pitch clock of not being able to, power down a little bit, and they're contributing factors. So let's see. Garrett Cole, Spencer Strider, Shane Bieber, Yuri Perez, and Framber Valdez. All with significant injuries.
And we're only going to see more. I mean, the thing with, like, Justin Steele is that was completely unrelated to throwing.
Yeah.
That was just a freak.
A
freak hamstring injury. But, hopefully he'll be back and healthy sooner than later. But, like, even so, it's like, regardless, that was another Cy Young finalist last year that's currently not pitching due to injury.
And honestly, the TJ injury, it's not just with pitchers anymore.
No.
I mean, you've got what's his face in Philadelphia, Bryce Harper. He's probably going to be a first baseman for the rest of his career now because of a significant arm injury.
Yeah.
I think the Cubs freaked out a little bit over the weekend with PCA pulled him out of a game because of elbow soreness.
Hopefully that's nothing.
Yeah, that's the hope. But, when growing up, I can't remember any position players getting Tommy John type injuries. It was all pitchers. So it's, there's significant problems going on that are more than just happenstance and bad coincidence.
Yeah, and unfortunately, when you look at situations with injuries to big name players, is, you know, that kind of changes the scope in a number of areas. And that you know, you think about, okay, if these injuries were happening to kind of lesser known guys, you wouldn't really blink twice. But the fact of the matter is that no matter how big or small the player is, the fact that these injuries are quite frequent, you know, it's becoming an issue. It's like, oh yeah, you know, you notice because the big guys are getting hurt, but there are plenty of others that might not be as big a household names that you're seeing the injuries to. It's all over the place.
You know, not to do a complete pivot. I'm just looking. I'm going to change my stance on old Paul DeJong. I told you he had two home runs to tied for the lead for the White Sox. Do you know how many RBIs he has?
Two.
Two.
They're two solo shots, dude.
Two solo shots. That's just, I know RBI's numbers aren't like, you know, anywhere near as important as when I was a kid, but you take away Luis Robert and the White Sox have one, two, three, four guys that have two RBIs that are leading the team outside of Luis Robert. You have four guys with two RBIs, three guys with one RBI, and nobody else has an RBI. Like, I know RBIs aren't a good individual stat, but as a team, if you add up all of those RBIs for your players, it should be a higher number. If you're good, if you want to win games, like you need to score those runs.
Right. I mean, yeah. And you're just, you don't see them hitting the ball hard. They're striking out or hitting the ball on the ground.
Yeah, I'm going to list the players that would, on the Cubs, that would lead the White Sox in RBIs. Seiya Suzuki, Cody Bellinger, Ian Happ, Michael Busch, Christopher Morel, Dansby Swanson, Nick Madrigal, Miguel Amaya, Garrett Cooper.
Nee. It's too bad that the efforts of Garrett Crochet have been wasted so far, because he's looked like an ace.
He really
has. That's like the one nice big surprise is how good he's looked.
Is, remember we used to always laugh oh my God, who was the pitcher we traded Eloy Jimenez for? Why am I having an old man moment?
Quintana?
Yeah. Is, we used to laugh about how poor the run support he got during his White Sox tenure was. And we're like, oh, he comes to the Cubs, we're going to give him that run support. And then he just was a worse pitcher. But you laugh, you're like, oh, the White Sox not giving run support. And then Garrett Crochet is just like, hold my beer. This team is just gonna not give me any runs.
Yeah. Cause what, he lost 1-0 on opening day. He did contribute to the one win against Atlanta. I don't know if he got the win or not, but he was part of that, and then pitched another good game in KC, and then the bullpen kind of blew it. So just kind of a shame for him, because he's been the biggest bright spot in the White Sox so far, has been his pitching effort.
Absolutely. I mean, he's been really good.
And like legit, like not fluky good, like dominant good.
Yeah. Like, you just watch him and you're like, oh man, you know, I'm going to admit, we talked a lot of shit about, you know, him being a bullpen guy and not being able to do it. And he's been really good. Like, really good. That stuff is just, you know, awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes you at least say, hey, there's something to follow here. And also give Eric Fetty some credit. So far, he's been pretty good himself. I think that he deserves some credit too. You know, like we said, the starting rotation itself has overall been pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, especially considering the expectation that we had for them, like, oh, they're all going to have like 12 ERAs, and they've, like, honestly, they haven't, that hasn't if you're listing the problems the White Sox have, that is really, really low on the list.
Yeah, and I thought it was going to be the bigger story versus the offense.
Yeah. I mean, Fetty pitched the other Friday, and like he's not blowing anybody out of the water, but he gave you five innings of one run baseball, and you lost 2-1.
Yeah.
You know, Kopech
Yeah.
blew that one. And, but then, I mean, I don't even want to blame Kopech because if you give up two runs, you should be winning.
Right.
Especially against the Royals. Like you can't, everything. The problem is at some point you can't put your pitchers in a position where every at bat is a stressful at bat.
Right.
It just, that's not sustainable. You can't pitch everything to, you know, like, oh, you know what? If we give up one run or two runs, we're losing this game. Like that's just unneeded pressure on that pitching staff and on the bullpen. Like you've got to give them some run support.
Yeah, and so far they've gotten none of it.
But even like Michael Soroka hasn't been terrible.
He's been fine. I mean, he had a really bad opening inning against the Tigers, but since then he's been pretty solid.
Yeah, I mean, he pitched that 10-1 loss, but that wasn't him. He did.
It was 2-1 going to like the eighth inning or something.
Yeah, it was. You know, it was all one inning that they really scored all those runs.
It was a very Bills fan puke inning.
Yeah, the look in the seventh inning they scored 8 runs. Like that wasn't Soroka.
No.
Like when, you know, when he left, it was they were. I think it was like 2-0 or 2-1. Like it was, you know, he pitched well enough to keep them in that game, and that's just been a problem. Like how do you win games if you're not scoring any runs?
Right.
So,
Yeah.
And then you add on top of that is the. You've got the you give up a Jose Canseco home run, where it just goes off the outfielder and they call it a home run, and nobody challenges it.
No. I thought it was a ground rule double at first. I'm like, wait, did that go off the glove or the wall? I couldn't tell.
You know what's wild to me is I was on, I want to say, I was on MLB Trade Rumors, and I think that's where I saw it. And people were talking about that play, and so many people were like, "Well, it's not a ground rule double because it didn't hit the ground." I'm like, "That doesn't matter. It's a ground rule double. It's not a ground like touching the ground. It's a ground rule double because that's the ground rules for the game of baseball." Like if it goes off of somebody and then into there, that's they only get the two bases. It's not a home run. And the ding dong manager just doesn't, you know, it was when that happened and his reaction to it post game gave off such Tony La Russa vibes.
Glug glug glug.
It's like, oh, I didn't know that was the rule. I'll be better next time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that one time in the extra innings with Tony.
Tony had that a couple times where people after the game pointed out the rule to him. He's like, well, I don't know.
Here's my question. If Tony or Grifol doesn't know the rule, does that mean the assistant coaches don't either? Like, somebody can't go up to him and be like, hey, we should look at that.
Well, I heard the first baseman knew the rules, but nobody could find him, the first base coach.
Oh, right. Yeah, because he was hiding, going to the bathroom, and then Pedro Grifol had to give the weirdest answer. It's like, dude, if you had to go to the bathroom, just say, when you got to go, you got to go. Move on. You didn't have to make it weirder than it had to be.
It was so embarrassing that they had to halt the game because you need a first base coach, and there wasn't one. You couldn't find him.
You
Like, just.
needed to halt a 9-0 game in the middle of terrible weather.
Just send somebody over there. It's not like you're going to get a runner on base. Just send, hey, who's free? Run over there and be the first base coach. Like, I don't care. I don't think the rule is you have to have that guy. Just, he's taking a dump. Like, just throw somebody else over there. Oh my God. It's just so embarrassing. And I mean, the Jerry curse over this team is just so blatant.
We're not gonna go in on Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, because he would score runs.
Right. And you have to pay money for that.
Like, honestly, is we talked about, like, oh, Grifols going to come in here and they're going to be a better fielding team. And honestly, for a first couple of games, you're like, okay, this team is fielding better. And then the last couple of games, they've just been miserable. So, like, the fielding gaffes are back. You can't score runs. You're not getting hits. Your bullpen's a mess. Your coaching staff is a mess.
Does Pedro Grifol make it past Memorial Day at this point?
If he was on a functioning team, no way. But this is the White Sox. They're not going to pay him to go away. They're not going to pay him to go away.
Well, I mean, they did keep Robin Ventura all those years, and the only reason that you saw Tony La Russa leave is because of health issues.
I mean, it is absolutely just mind-numbingly such a poor run organization. I
Oh,
just,
do we have to talk about the other thing too?
yeah, is, you're like, oh, hey, we're already an embarrassment. Let's go out and sign a Mike Clevinger back that
I
nobody
just.
wanted because he was not like he was a Turd Ferguson,
He's coming off a season with a 3.77 ERA in like 20 some starts. Like, under any other circumstance, he would have plenty of value and a team would have signed him a long time ago. But we know why he has no value. And guess what? Nobody wanted him last year. Nobody wanted him this year. So here's my question. What's the point? Are you going to bring Mike Clevinger on to save your season? Because if you bring him in and he pitches well, hasn't the league made the point that he's not wanted? So if he comes in and pitches well for you and you try to trade him at the deadline, nobody wanted him last year. Is that going to change this year? Didn't change in the offseason. So then what's the point?
And what's even worse is that, like, number one, the least bad problem you have on this team is the starting rotation. So
Right.
you go add this dude to fix the problem that's your least bad problem. And what's even worse, the insult to injury is you add this Turd Ferguson, and then you basically give away one of your better farm system players in Jose Rodriguez.
Yeah, you traded him so you could bring Mike Clevinger back?
Like, the Phillies just he's on their top 30 prospects. They just, hey, look at this. We got this guy for nothing.
Dave Dombrowski is probably ecstatic about this.
Think, what the hell? Like, what is Chris Getz doing?
I don't get it. I don't I truly, truly don't get it. And have you noticed they've traded a decent number of cash considerations related trades?
But yeah, because you gotta make that cash. How else is Jerry gonna pay for things?
Well, yeah, I mean, the state of Illinois is not giving him the stadium money, so you better go in and collect that another way.
You know what? It's what's gonna happen is he's just gonna be like, okay, well, I can't. They're not gonna give me money. I'll wait it out. I'll wait till there's another governor, and then I'll go to him. And, here's the thing, is there, if it's slowly starting to turn into what the Oakland A's did, where you just put such a bad product on the field, and then when the fans just get so disgusted by it, stop going, then you go, well, look, we don't have any fan support and nobody will help us build a new stadium. We're going to have to move. That's the move that they're trying to do. And, at least the A's had Billy Beane for a long time, who was a good general manager and, kept their cheapness afloat by finding some quality players. But the White Sox just put ding-dongs and dingleberries in a GM, and you just have an abysmal organization, and they're not going to move.
No.
What? What kind of dipshittery would you're like, all right, hey, like, I'm going to, what kind of TV revenue do you think you're going to get going to Nashville?
It's all leverage. Get that 78.
Like, what here? Like, have you seen the landscape of the regional sports network around the country? Like, Chicago has a thriving one because you have multiple sports most of the year on that. You have the White Sox, the Blackhawks, and the Bulls. You've got three teams on that regional sports network and keeps it afloat. Others, Nashville, what team are you going to have on that regional sports network? The Titans are on regular TV. What, do they have an NBA team? Do they have an NHL team? Yeah, I guess you got the Nashville Predators, but are they on that?
I was going to say they got the Predators, but I think they're on Bali right now, I think.
I don't know. Like, what, like, you, I don't know what their regional sports network situation is, but there's a lot of teams right now that are like, that's why you saw so many. I mean, that was a partial reason why you saw so many Boris clients not get what they were hoping for, because a lot of teams just like, I'm not spending, our finances are on hold because we don't know what's happening with our TV revenue. And you're telling me you're going to go from the Chicago TV market to the Nashville TV market and just suddenly be like, oh yeah, yeah, we're making money now? I don't think so. That just seems really stupid. And that's a ploy. Jerry is not moving this team to Nashville. He can huff
No.
and puff all he wants. His best bet is just pony up the money and look at the hand over fist money that the Ricketts are making with the Cubs.
With pumpkins at Gallagher Way.
I mean, number one, they have bought all that property around Wrigley Field.
Real estate.
They own hotels. They own restaurants. They own all of those rooftops across the street. And they own their own stadium. And, for the most part, they were told they had to pay for it themselves. They've got some tax rate things that benefit them, but they fronted the money for it. And that's what, if Jerry wants something like that, he's going to have to pony up. It's called an investment. And look, what did the Ricketts pay for the Cubs?
Wasn't it like 800,000 or so? I could be way off on that.
I want to say it was under $1 billion.
Yeah.
And what are they estimated to be worth now? Like $5.5 billion or $5 billion or something ridiculous?
Right. Like, it was like 800 million versus what it's valued at now at like five some million. Billion, I should say. Blech.
Yeah. So it's, the Ricketts bought him for in 2009 for $845 million, and now they're worth over $4 billion. So you're making money every year as a cash profit, and also your investment has grown since 2009 over $3 billion. Like that's an astronomical growth. That's how you have to look at it, is sure, are you making profit every year for your ownership group? Yeah, but the big play is having the land and owning the infrastructure and raising the value of your organization. And to do that, you have to invest money. The Bears realize this, that's why they came to the city. That's why you're hearing movement on a Bears stadium and not the White Sox, because the Bears came in there and they're like, we have $2 billion to spend. Suddenly everyone goes, okay, well, we hear you're $2 billion. You came to the table, you came correct. And that's not how the White Sox have come and approached things. They are a nickel and dime organization, and it's absolutely infuriating. And I mean, I'm a Cubs fan, and I feel for every White Sox fan, because it's hard. As a Bears fan, I could tell you it is hard to just be like, I'm going to change my allegiance to a team that is functional.
It's very hard. It's
Yeah.
very, very hard. And it's rough, man. It is.
And as at least as a Bears fan, I feel, I mean, knock on, where's wood? I need some wood. Knock, knock, knock on wood. Is I feel like we're seeing light at the end of the tunnel. The White Sox, you're like in the depths of hell. It is pitch black.
Yeah, and I can even say as a Cubs fan myself as well that like that's also a Bulls fan, that the city of Chicago as a whole is all done with Jerry Reinsdorf. Whether you're both a Bulls fan and a Sox fan, or if you're a Bulls fan, also a Cubs fan like you and I am, but whatever capacity, Reinsdorf continues to be a stain on the city, and it's brutal. It really, really is.
He runs these organizations I mean, I don't want to say poorly, because if you look at it from ownership perspective, he's running it really well because they're making money. But from a fan and a league perspective, he is such a bad owner. And you take away that Jordan legacy, and the Bulls are a dumpster fire.
Yeah, they're awful. I mean, the
And
only good time you had around it was Derrick Rose.
you like I know that they're gonna make the play-in tournament, and they're a middle of the road team, but as far as like they just have no prospect of winning an NBA championship in the foreseeable future. And that's kind of what I'm saying for them is the White Sox are just they're just bad, but the Bulls, you're like, okay. Like they've got a couple decent players, and they're a mid team, but there's no, the problem with being mid is there's no easy way to go to the top, and it's a real hard road to go to the bottom.
Well, aren't you? But aren't you gearing up though? Aren't you getting ready for the play-in tournament? And the magic number is 3 for us to host the first game of the play-in tournament. Aren't you excited and jacked?
I mean, I'll watch it, but I don't have any hopes. Like you, like,
Oh
all right.
yeah, I'll just watch it for what it is and not really be overly emotionally invested in it, just like I was last year.
It's frustrating because you're just like, okay, like what is that path? Like the NFL is a whole lot easier to turn around, because there's so much parity in the league,
We see it every year.
and it's truly a team sport. I mean, I know you need a quarterback to be like truly elite, but it's in the NBA, there's such a small roster, and it's at this point now where you need like three superstars to win a title, and like two to three superstars, and superstars are really hard to get. You have to draft one and develop that person,
Yeah.
and then use that leverage and to pull another one in. and the Bulls just they haven't drafted one of those guys.
No, not since D Rose. Or I guess you should say Jimmy Butler, but even so, that was over a decade ago.
And you know, honestly, think back, Jimmy Butler, everybody was like, are we really trying to give this guy a max contract? And, you know, at the time, he needed to take that next step. It was very, very analogous to Zach LaVine, except, you know, and even after Jimmy Butler left, you know, he went to Minnesota and he wasn't like superstar there. It wasn't until like a couple of stops later when it just Miami was a really, really well-run organization. Just he put it all together.
And when you have a coach like Eric Spoelstra, that helps too.
You have an elite coach and you have your president of basketball operations is like the upper echelon. And
yeah, Pat Riley knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it's just a really well-run organization. And you add on top of that, that it's, you know, the destination there in Miami is where a lot of people want to go. And I know Chicago, I mean, I think Chicago is way better than Miami, but just, you know, you've got to factor in that weather and that lifestyle. And a lot of,
and
NBA
the quality
players,
of the organization.
Yeah. Like a lot of people love that, like in the NBA, love that kind of nightlife, lifestyle that South Beach offers you. And, you know, NBA wives, they love that South Beach lifestyle. So it's a lot easier to sell with that and couple it with a really good organization. And the Bulls just don't have that. And they're not going to get that until Jerry sells the team or his kids sell the team when he dies.
Right.
But I want to spin to the Bears for a few minutes. There's not a ton going on with the Bears, but you know, the eyes are all on the draft. And I don't know if you've been following the, you know, which players have been going on official 30, top 30 visits for other teams at all. But Caleb Williams is only going to go on one visit. That was the Bears.
Yeah, I saw that.
So he was only going to give medicals to the teams that he visited in person for a top 30 visit. So only the Bears have his medicals. He only visited the Bears. It just seems like.
And DJ Moore was there.
DJ Moore was there. Tyreek Stevenson was there. You know, he's building camaraderie with players already. He already has a relationship with Keenan Allen. You know what's funny? I want to roll back. So you remember Keenan Allen at the pro day for USC, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what he was wearing?
Wasn't he wear what Keenan Allen was wearing?
Yeah.
That I don't remember.
He was decked out in a full Bears sweatsuit.
I remember him having a Bears shirt. Did he have Bears shoes on?
He had Bears sweats on. And the funny part is he thought he was going incognito. like Keenan Allen is like has very distinctive facial hair. And he rolls in with Bears gear on. Like that. Like all he needed was to write, you know, Keenan Allen in purple crayon on his forehead to be any more cognito. But I mean, it seems the Bears are all in on Caleb Williams and that this is a foregone conclusion that he's going number one.
It has been for a while. We know that this is going to be the way it is.
I mean, you know, we've heard the Commanders are going to make a push to try to get that number one pick from the Bears. And we've heard maybe the Bears could pivot and take Jaden Daniels or Drake May. And And that has just absolutely not been the case.
Any professional that tries to spin that any other way from here on out, it should be cause for termination.
Yeah, it is pretty much a guarantee at this point. But, you know, from the last few drafts that we've had with Ryan Poles, he's drafted guys from that top 30 visits.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's interesting to see who he's bringing in, because that's, you're like, okay, well, that's who, you know, is very likely that we're going to be picking from. And Malik Nabers is coming in. Marvin Harrison was there already. Xavier mm-hmm. Worthy, the wide receiver, was there. Dallas Turner, the Alabama edge rusher. Leatu Latu, the edge rusher, was there. You know, you're seeing, and you hear Flus and Poles talk about they're drafting blue players. I don't think the Bears are going to trade that number 9 pick.
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of guys that would be on the board that they'd be interested in.
I think they really are at the point where they look at this and they're like, okay, we can get a blue chip player at number 9. Like, do we want to get a grade A player 9, or trade back to later in the first and get a B player with, you know, a lottery ticket further down, you know, or do we just want to take our A player? I feel like they think that their roster is at the point now where they just want to get the best player they can get, not necessarily the most players.
Right. No, I agree. And this isn't 2022 or 2023 where you were getting rid of a dead cap roster and you were just trying to refill it by stocking up on draft picks. You're trying to start to be competitive. And at number 9, it feels like with those guys that they listed, someone's got to be available, right? Someone that they want.
Absolutely.
They have one. I mean, they have the first pick. So then you have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 to go through. That's it. And there's plenty of guys that could be interested on the board. And think about it. Several of those picks that you have in between are going to be other quarterbacks.
You know, and you look at what their roster is, and you're like, on defense, you know, you have one glaring hole, and that's an edge rusher. Sure, getting an absolute stud 3 technique would be cool, but I think they feel pretty good about Jervon Dexter if they don't. But you need that edge rusher. And on offense, like, you look and you're like, okay, the wide receiver depth drops off pretty precipitously. And we don't know if we'll have Keenan Allen after this year. And even if we do, Keenan Allen's in his 30s.
Right.
I don't know how long father time will let him play at a high level. So is wide receiver an absolute, like, need at this point? No, but you're projecting out. And I know that JT O'Sullivan, former Packers backup, had a comment like, oh, if you're drafting a top 10 wide receiver, that you don't have a number one. And I think that's silly. I think you're looking at the potential to add an absolute elite guy, and you're drafting him for next year. You're doing what good teams do, is you're not absolutely drafting a guy for right now. You're looking forward. You have the ability to look forward with your team, and drafting a Malik Nabers or a Roma Dunze for your team is, you're not putting the pressure on this rookie wide receiver. You're putting him in there, getting him acclimated to the system. And then when Keenan Allen's gone next year, Then he becomes the dude. And, with all hope is he's so good that he makes DJ Moore your 1B. And
That's pretty good.
that's what you're trying to do. So, you look at the position groups and polls kind of let it slip that of where they're looking, because he was saying he was dividing up his team, his staff, into they're gonna essentially debate what position that they want to pick. And he said that defensive tackle, edge rusher, offensive tackle, wide receiver. There was no tight end in there.
No.
I don't think Brock Bowers is in their list.
No.
And so it kind of narrows you down because they're taking Caleb Williams. So they're not talking about quarterback. Nobody was arguing quarterback in there. So you've got Caleb Williams. So you're looking at the two defensive tackles fit, and that's Byron Murphy from Texas and Johnny Newton from Illinois. So all right, those guys are on the plate. You got two. Edge rusher, Leatu Latu from UCLA, Jared Verse from Florida State, and Dallas Turner from Alabama. And they haven't brought in Jared Verse. Maybe they see that he's too much like Montez Sweat and you want to vary up, but they haven't brought him in yet. But I'm going to put those three in there. Wide receiver, you've got Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Roman Dunze at top three. And then offensive tackle, I'm going to put Joe Alt as the one guy. There's some other decent tackles like JC Latham, but I don't know if you take one of those guys at nine. Especially, I think you're going to get a good year from Braxton Jones this year. You saw that growth last year. And coming out of a small program, I feel like he's really going to take that jump in the third year. So you're really down. You got one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine guys that you're looking at. And one of them is going to be there. Absolutely, at least one of them by numbers. And then you look and you're like, okay, well, I'm drafting one. So that means eight spots later, there's nine guys. So, and then you've got to factor in too is at least two other quarterbacks are getting drafted in those spots, maybe three other ones. So then, if let's just be conservative and say two quarterbacks, that means six, at most, six of your nine, those nine guys are going to be gone. So you really do have the pick of the litter. And if you trade back, you lose that mathematical probability that your guys is going to be there. And I have a question for you. I've heard a lot of people talk about because the Bears brought in Marvin Harrison. And I think most draft Knicks would say that Marvin Harrison, regardless of position, is either the first or the second best player in this draft. Is, and the Bears brought him in for a top 30 visit today. Do you think if he fell a little further than was expected, that if you were Ryan Poles, what would you be willing to give up, or would you be willing to give up anything to move up from nine to try to get Marvin Harrison?
I think you field phone calls, but I don't know if you get a deal you want because I feel like if you're moving up, you better move up. It better be a few spots, and it better be a few spots with a team that doesn't really need or want him because it's like, well, we could take Marvin Harrison. What can you give us that ensures that we get a good end of this deal? You know what I mean? So I think there'd be a temptation to move in an attempt, but will it happen? I don't know.
Yeah, let me see if I can come up with a concrete situation here. All right, so the Bears take Caleb Williams at one. Let's go. Let's say Washington takes Jaden Daniels at two. And if Drake May is there at three, I don't think New England passes on Drake May. Let's go on a wild, say that Minnesota trades up to four to go after JJ McCarthy. So now you're good. And then we say that Jim Harbaugh gives a wild card and he goes Joe Alt at number five. He's going to pound that ball. He wants a big offensive lineman. And so you're the Giants. Giants say take Malik Nabers. So you would is
Do you really think the Giants would take Nabers over Marvin Harrison Jr.?
possibly. I mean, here's my concern about Marvin Harrison Jr. is we don't know his straight line speed. And if will he get the separation at the NFL level that he got in college? I know he's absolutely can play any receiver position on the field. He can block. He just doesn't drop anything. He's able to dive. He's able to run routes like absolute nobody's business. He can go up high to get balls. Just doesn't drop anything. I know that. But if he doesn't have that top end speed, is he going to have that threat of taking it to the house? And is he going to get good enough separation for a sub mediocre Danny Dimes quarterback to hit him? Versus Malik Nabers ran what, a 4.28 or four, some ridiculous thing, and that guy can take any ball to the house. He's going to be very Tyreek Hill like. I feel like, if you have an elite quarterback, Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to give you elite level production. But I think Malik Nabers is a better friend to a lesser quarterback.
Okay.
They're both exceptionally good. I think Malik Nabers might be a little bit of a depending on how your quarterback is, might be a little bit of a safer pick in some situations. So I'm going to say they're like with Danny Dimes and they're like, hey, we lost big playability with Saquon Barkley leaving. Let's go after the home run hot hitter. So
Right.
now the Titans are on the clock. They lost Joe Alt already. And you're the Bears. Do you go, you know what? If Malik Nabers is, I mean, if Marvin Harrison is still there at seven and Rome Odunze hasn't been drafted, one of those guys is going to fall. Do you trade up two spots to try to go get your dude?
It's tempting. It's
It is tempting.
tempting.
It is tempting.
Will
And
it happen or will a deal make sense? I don't know, but it's tempting.
I mean, you think about it, the Bears do not have anything to trade this year to make it happen. You only have four picks.
Right.
So it means you're trading from your 2025 pool.
Right. That's basically you saying, hey, like, the next few years we're playing to contend and we're putting our chips on the table now.
I think you would have to trade Carolina, the second round pick you got from Carolina next year. I think that's the pick that you have to trade to move up two spots, which is pretty rich because that's going to be a pretty good pick.
Absolutely.
So that's probably going to be pick 33 to 38 next year. I don't know, man. Marvin Harrison's good, but Roma Dunze is pretty good too. And
Yeah.
the odds of in that scenario, one of those two being there at nine, where you could keep that second rounder. Don't know, man. I see the pros, and but I think Roma Dunze would look just as good in a Bears uniform.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree.
Yeah,
It's
so.
draft day, though. Expect the unexpected in the first round, especially in those top 10 picks. Like, we know the Bears are going to take Caleb Williams, and I'm pretty more than sure that you're going to have the Commanders take a quarterback.
Yes.
After
And then,
that,
and I don't know. And here's the thing is, I don't know which quarterback is,
right. It could be either.
if you told me it's JJ McCarthy, I'm not going to be shocked. I mean,
Yeah.
is that the way I go? Probably not. I'm probably going Drake May. I think my ranking is Caleb Williams, Drake May, and then a pretty sizable drop off. And then I probably like Bo Nix better than a lot of people do.
I know he's got an arm. Like he's got a hell of an arm.
He's gonna come in ready to play. He's just a little older. But I mean, after that it's is my fear with Jaden Daniels is he is a less physically gifted Justin Fields. Like same dynamic guy, just not as physically imposing. And Michael Penix has red flag injury history, and he's older. He's gonna be, remember how we talked about Velus Jones being a senior citizen when he was drafted?
Yep.
Is like Michael Penix is like the same age. He's 25. He's gonna be 25. He turns 25 during like OTAs. And JJ McCarthy, we don't know. He's an unknown. He didn't get asked to do a lot. So I don't know. I mean, it's nice that the Bears are in the position to take the top dude because there's a lot of question marks.
Yeah, there are.
So I mean, honestly, it the question marks start hitting at two. Because if JJ McCarthy goes second, I think the feeding frenzy is going to start because people are going to be like, oh, I'm trading up for Jaden Daniels or Drake May.
What if JJ McCarthy really is the Vikings guy and he goes at the second pick?
That would make me laugh. That'd make
Would
me
they
laugh a whole lot.
you think they would try to trade up for another one of the quarterbacks? Like, is their plan B like a Bo Nix or even a Jaden Daniels? I don't know.
I mean, honestly, I'm gonna the Vikings are not in a good situation because they don't have a quarterback and they're picking at 11, but at least they've got another first rounder this year that they can package to move up.
Right.
I don't like what the hell are the Broncos gonna do here?
I don't know. I don't know.
Like the Broncos, the Broncos don't like they're drafting 12th and their next pick is 76. Like they can't they have nothing to package up to move up. And
Yeah.
they don't have a first rounder next year. That went in the to get Sean Payton. So like are they just going to be like we'll sit here at 12 and take Bo Nix? Just draft him way too high. And that's a real possibility because they don't have the ammunition to move up. They're picking 12. At least the Vikings have ammunition to move up.
They do, yes.
So, I mean,
The Vikings aren't in the worst spot, let's say that.
the Vikings have put themselves in, they're not in an enviable situation, but they're also not in a pickle.
Right. The Broncos are in a pickle.
Yeah. Like You know, you look at Tennessee, you're like, I have no idea what they have in their quarterbacks, but at least they're a team that's completely tearing down before the rebuild, so it doesn't matter. The Vegas Raiders, I mean, at least you have Minshew as your quarterback. So if you feel confident that he can at least be serviceable. But Denver, man, I don't know what Denver. I mean, I think they're just going to go on the hubris that Sean Payton thinks that he can turn any quarterback other than Russell Wilson into a winner.
Yeah, that's.
I think Bo Nix is their dude. Bo Nix at 12, which is wild. I like Bo Nix probably more than most, but man, I see him as one of those, probably a second round guy, but because of the importance of the position, somebody trades late into the first round to get that extra fifth year option at the rookie deal. But man, taking him at 12, wild to me. So yeah, I mean, we are getting close here to the draft, and you know, I'm getting a little antsy.
Oh yeah, a lot of people are, and we can finally put some things to rest by that time.
I mean, we can at least, I saw a tweet you put out, and I had it in my notes to talk about, but I think we can put the locker room being split about
yes.
Justin Fields out of misery.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I had a concern about it. It wasn't like you can't trade Justin Fields, but I was worried that it was one of those things where, and still a possibility, if you trade a guy they love and the new guy comes in and just fails miserably, that, you know, maybe the locker room gets lost earlier than they would be. But it seems like there's a good rapport. And the only one who's had any sort of negativity to say is Jalen Johnson, who is just, we're going to beat the Hollywood out of them.
Yeah, right.
Which is good. That's a defensive player. Let him take aim at a rookie.
Yeah.
It's like, he's still going to be carrying bags. I don't care. But I like the fact that your offensive leader, even Cole Kmet, who I think was a pretty staunch Justin Fields supporter, has just been like, you know what? That's how the business of the league works. And sad to see Justin go. We're going to move forward.
Yeah, it's a business is a business, and professionals are professionals.
Yeah. And that's just, you know, I think they're all going to go about it professionally. And you've already seen the receivers go, hey, listen, you know, I put up good numbers with a different quarterback. Let's work to put up good numbers with this quarterback because we've got contracts coming up. Let's make this work.
Yep.
Do you want to talk Blackhawks at all?
Season's coming down. Was at the game yesterday. Probably the worst game I ever saw in person. I think that overall they've been playing a little bit better, but I don't know. Peter Mrazek, you've been a beast. Good for you. Bedard, you know, is going to be probably the favorite to win the Calder Trophy.
I just think it's funny that
not much else I have.
What if all of the Minnesota fans been chirping about in the rookie of the year voting? What have they been chirping?
Oh, about Faber?
Yeah. What has been their chirp in the Faber versus
plus minus?
Yes. Now you go look at the plus minus and they're very similar.
Like, yeah.
And so suddenly now it's like, So the plus minus police have kind of shut up. There's absolutely no debate. Connor Bedard is the rookie of the year. Even after missing how much time with a broken jaw, he's the clear cut winner. I mean, Faber's had a nice season, but like it's Connor Bedard is having a really damn good season. Do you know who else has had a really, really good season? Alex Vlasic.
I thought you were going to say Jason Dickinson, but yeah.
Vlasic has had a really nice season. And, you know, I'm trying to look at the positives. The Blackhawks have been bad this season. I'm trying to find the glass half full. Vlasic had a really nice year. Connor Bedard is elite.
Yep.
Lucas Reichel is playing better as of late.
Yeah, he came back up and it's better. You know, is it at the point where we've wanted it to be all these years? No, but at least you're seeing positive direction.
Yeah. Wyatt Kaiser, I think, has had a pretty nice season. And I know they just sent him down to Rockford, but I think that was they're trying to bolster that Rockford team. Like, what else is he going to do in the NHL? He's just playing empty minutes, at least in Rockford. You know, he's going to get some playoff, hopefully get some playoff experience. But I think Wyatt Kaiser has had a nice season on him. So there's been some definite things to be excited about. We're gonna get a very high draft pick, and you see some of the prospects that they have. They just look great. Frank Nazar, or is it Nazar?
Frank Nazar, yeah, speedster, looks really good in the University of Michigan.
Yeah, and that's, you're like, man, can't wait for that dude to be here. But yeah, I mean, there are some definite pros. They'll have Taylor Hall again when he's healthy.
Yeah, I mean, that was such a big blow early on in the season because he was, you know, not only going to be a positive player for the Blackhawks, but it was going to be a really nice piece for Connor Bedard to play with. And it really stinks that just, you know, it's not like he got hurt 3/4 of the way through the season. It was within the first weeks, and that was just a really devastating injury. And no, it would it have made them a good team or a contender? No, nowhere near close, but it was a tough loss for the kid.
I think if nothing else, it makes having him makes Bedard better.
Yes. Yes.
That's your goal. That's what you do right now, is you make Bedard better.
Well, and what really sucks is at the beginning of the season is not only did you lose him, but you lost Athanasiou for a long time, and then the Corey Perry thing happened, and when Corey Perry was playing before everything went down, he was looking pretty solid for his age.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think we all turned the corner with him, and then suddenly he reminded us how much we hate him.
Yeah. It was like, hey, remember that 1 month we didn't mind you?
So, you know, there's positives here. Otherwise really lost season.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's gonna be interesting to see when the NHL lottery happens, because how many games are left? Just a handful?
Not many. Not
five,
many.
Five, six?
They basically have 1 week left, and then it's all done.
Let's see. You've got one, two, three, four, five games left. You've got five games left. You're not catching San Jose in the. They're 7 points ahead of you, but you're 4 points ahead of Anaheim. So the odds are you're gonna have the second best odds of getting that number one overall pick in the Macklin Celebrini pick, but also finishing second, the worst you're gonna draft is fourth.
I know it's not as deep of a draft as it was last year, but still.
You know, The thing about that last year's draft is there was a lot, like an unseasonable number of guys that were ready to step right into the NHL.
You had multiple guys that could have been first overall picks in many other drafts. It just happened to be in a draft that Connor Bedard was in.
Yeah, and that's, I heard Danny Parkins call Caleb Williams a generational talent and compared it to, it's like, I don't see the difference between Bedard and
The hit rate on hockey is so much higher.
honestly, is no disrespect to Caleb Williams, but when Bedard is coming out was much closer to when LeBron James came out.
Right.
Is when LeBron James came out, there were years, people were waiting years. They're like, when is this kid old enough to be able to draft? When is he old enough? We would draft him at 16 if we could. And it was years of waiting for a teenager to be ready. And when he goes, everybody was like, it's a lottery. It's a lottery to get this kid. It's very much like LeBron. And Caleb Williams is very good, but if you look back, people keep throwing generational around. It kind of loses its luster. But, Trevor Lawrence was a guy that for multiple years, you look back 3 years to find the last guy who was being touted as the number one guy for multiple years. And then you go a few years before that and Joe Burrow, and then you go a couple years before that, and Andrew Luck, and there's a lot of guys where you're like, oh, multiple years there, people are, I can't wait for this draft. Connor Bedard was different, and there's those type of guys don't come along. Those are really generational.
Right. I mean, and look at the history of first overall picks in the NHL. I mean, you can go back to Mario Lemieux, but look how many times you hit on those. Like, look at Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin and Patrick Kane. I mean, the success rate is just so high. And even like guys who were first overall picks, but not Hall of Famers, like Eric Johnson, long career, very good career. Taylor Hall, very good player. And then you get to like Connor McDavid and, so many of these guys. You're looking at it and you're like, well, hey, you're either hitting right on the button or you're still getting something that's pretty good for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, look at this run. Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, Marc-Andre Fleury, Rick Nash, Ilya Kovalchuk, Rick DiPietro. It's a hell of a run. Then you got Vincent Cavalier, Joe Thornton, Eric Lindros, Matt Sedin, Mike Modano,
I mean, that's.
Mario Lemieux, Dale Havrichuk. It's a hell of a lot of good names in there. Guy LaFleur. It's a lot of good names in there.
Yep.
So, I mean, with the cap space they have, the guys coming back from injury, the foundation they've sort of built this year, the coaching staff in place, the prospect pool that they have that are, some of those guys are going to be ready to make that jump next. And the possibility of getting a Macklin Celebrini who could step right in as well. You're feeling pretty confident. You've got a ton of money to spend. The key is going to be spending wisely so you don't find yourself in that pickle when young players are due for their next contract.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think the Blackhawks have put themselves in a good position. I mean, you look, this is a team that the Reinsdorfs can learn from. Like, you know, the Wirtz family, after the old man Wirtz died, you know, you take away the black eye of the beach situation. And for the most part, this has been pretty much just absolute hitting it out of the park, putting together a dynasty, turning fan support around. So many people that were never hockey fans suddenly became hockey fans. It's, you know, there's a very successful Blackhawks store downtown. There's no White Sox store downtown.
Yeah, the Blackhawks store is a fun place to go.
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. It's weird. You got to go to the second floor and walk up weird steps, but it's so cool to walk into there.
Isn't that where they have the introductory press conference for Luke Richardson? I know it was somewhere downtown.
I don't know. I don't remember. But yeah, I mean, it's. I remember when I went to the Winter Classic when it was at Wrigley Field, and right above me, in the boxes, Rocky Wirtz stepped out, and all the fans that were like right there that could see him, they all started chanting "Rocky, Rocky, Rocky," and you know how good that felt. You know, you're like, we care about an owner, and he gave us something good. Man, as a Bulls fan or White Sox fan, that would be nice. You know, maybe the McCaskies are going to give us that one day.
Yeah, right.
Everyone gets a purple crayon.
One singular purple crayon.
We will mail you one purple crayon to make up for all of the past years of frustrating Bears fandom.
Tired of all those 4 to 6 win years? Purple crayon make it right.
We will mail you one purple crayon and one sheet of Bears letterhead for you to draw your best picture.
I could totally see that. Just the paper with the Bears letterhead on it. I could totally see it.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's these next couple weeks are going to be fun. Cubs baseball and the draft. I'm just ready for it.
Let's just hope the Cubs could maintain here.
Yeah. Did their game start already?
Yeah, it's the top of the second, no score.
Okay. Last season it was a struggle. It's like I have YouTube TV and they don't get marquee. And I tried to do the workaround where I got the MLB package and then used a VPN to watch the Cubs, and they figured it out, so they kept blocking me.
Yeah.
So I really struggled to watch Cubs games last year. And this year I was just like, you know what? I just bought the streaming for Marquee Network, and now it's nice. I can watch it on my phone if I'm at work and there's day game. I just put it on my phone and have it in the background. And you know, at home I've got it on the app on the Apple TV, so it's got the big screen TV so I can watch it. So it's worth the $20 a month.
Yeah, there you go.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope, I think I've said my piece.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends, how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter/X, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the planes. Bears, 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down, I wanna...